All right, you're on Waiheke Radio. This is Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. I'm Chris Walker, your host, and it's the first Saturday of the month. So I'm joined in the studio by our opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. Good morning to you both.
It's the media's fault.
It's got to be someone else's fault. I didn't say that. Did I say that?
Well, you ought to, because it is the media's fault.
The mainstream media.
Oh, yes, sorry, the MSM.
Do we count as mainstream media?
Let's absolutely, just get this, yeah, I'm feeling pretty mainstream
or
this
are
morning.
We below the line scumbag bloggers, or what are we?
Well, we're not bloggers, but yeah, I don't know if you call us mainstream.
Well, anyway, we'll clear that up.
Yes.
Yes. The opinionated on this, Alan and Alex are here to kind of cast their mind over recent events, both local and national. And there's no shortage of things to talk about this month for sure.
Yeah,
of course we're in the midst of the election season.
What intrigues me about being in the middle of election season, if you look at the front page of the Herald for the last few weeks, in fact, you know, yesterday it was a shark stealing someone's camera, and the day before it was the soccer coach with the girl and the nude, and like is everything but the election on the front page?
Well, I mean, if they do say anything, they're accused by somebody of bias. So maybe they're just giving up on it.
But the
sharks
media,
eating cameras is simply more interesting.
You're probably a good metaphor anyway. But I think they shouldn't give up. They've got to say their piece, you know. We still reserve the right to say whether they're saying the right thing or not, surely. Isn't that how it works?
Well, I suppose so, yes. Yeah. I mean, okay, there is only one newspaper that you can buy, so that's which is tricky. But they do their best to try and keep it varied.
But I wondered if I might suggest a kind of lead. If I was the editor of the Listener, the Herald, whatever, if I was any editor out there, I would be... This is Journalism 101, big, juicy story. Go find Jason Eid. He's a bit like the Bourne... What are those movies? The Bourne... There's Jason Bourne in the movies. Those thrillers.
Yeah, I've never seen those.
The Bourne Identity and the Bourne this and that. And the recurring theme through the Bourne movies is, where is Jason Bourne? And it should be let's start a chant. We could start we could become a conspiracy. We could all start chanting together. Let's find Jason Eid. Where is Jason Eid?
Do you think people
are... Propping up a motorway flyover somewhere, possibly?
No, I reckon he's hiding in a gated community in Hawaii, possibly.
So, I mean, obviously all of this stuff, with, you know, whale oil, the leaks, Dirty Politics book and all the rest of it have been huge.
Yeah.
But, you know, are we at a point where we should be going... You know, and you hear this repeatedly from the politicians. Oh, no one's interested in this. What we need to do is talk about policies.
Now, I tend to disagree. It's a very, very, very important thing. The issue at stake here is the morality of governance, of leadership. And you could say it's become the biggest issue in this election campaign. If people say, let's talk about issues, well, issue number one is the morality of leadership. And there's still a hell of a lot of things to be answered, and our man Jason Eid is the one who could answer them. By the way, if you want to talk about policies, someone did an analysis yesterday showing that Labour had released 38 policy statements in the past 2 weeks. The National had released 5, and voting opened yesterday. So you can vote right now, but National still does not have a fiscal plan. They're not sure about the tax cuts, da da da. They don't have a plan, but they expect you to vote for them. Voting has already opened and they don't have a plan. So the opposition guys are talking policies, but when you're talking issues, the biggest issue is morality and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to talk about that one. Let's get it right until we're satisfied. Because if we're not, we're on a slippery slope. The loss of integrity happens by 100 little cuts, 100 little ways we lose integrity. And in the end, we become a police state. And we wonder how we got there.
So where are you on this, Alan? Do you think we should be moving on and talking about, you know, taxation policies and health and education and so on?
Well, it would be handy, but, I mean, certainly, yes, Labour have a lot of policy, but they've only really come up with it in the last few weeks. And everyone is still looking at the huge bloodstains on the floor of the Labour caucus. Mm. This is, I think, something that Labour should have sorted out a lot sooner. They still look like a party that is completely unfocused.
Yeah, but Alan is just... This is very interesting and insidious. If you obviously haven't read Dirty Politics, because if you had, you wouldn't talk like this. There's a whole... So you're a bit ignorant. There's a whole scenario.
I'm just trying to put the other side to this.
Yeah, no, but there's a whole, you can put the other side only if you're informed. There's a whole scenario here, and what you're rabbiting is a packaged provided media narrative. This narrative about Labour being in disarray is what you've been told to think through the machinations of blogs and so on.
I realise, obviously, it would be so much easier if the common people would just do what comfortable middle-class liberals tell them and vote Labour. People just won't do what they're told. They don't know what's good for them.
Exactly. They should do what's good for them. No, but seriously, Alan, this thing about Labour and disarray is...
Hey, look, I'm voting Labour this time around. Yeah, I have a problem with them.
It's a media narrative. If you go and look, they are under control. It's just we've been told this time and time again, so we repeat the story that they're not under control. It's there is no real basis to it. It's baseless allegations, shall we use a phrase from our dear leader. Yeah, it really doesn't stack
so
up.
So one of the things in that Dirty Politics book, which I think I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think from recollection it was Simon Lusk, who's attributed it. He says, you know, all of the more you can dirty politics, the better it is, because it puts people off the process and then they don't participate, and the less participation tends to favour the right rather than the left.
And the finishing, and the last few words in the end, in the postscript to the book, Kaga says, whatever you do, whatever your feelings are, you can be as you like, or as conservative as you like, just go out and participate.
And so I suppose what that gets us to is, well, you know, the dutying of politics, which, you know, has been exposed, that's might be what drives the disillusion with politicians and politics. Yeah. But does that mean we shouldn't talk about it?
Well, now definitely
well,
not.
Also, the dirtying of politics comes with some stock responses as well. A lot of people say, oh, everyone does it. Disagree. Not everyone does it. There are honourable people still within the National Party, and there's not a hint of scandal attached to, say, the Greens leadership. It's not the case that everyone does it. So that is a defence that has to be severely contested. Sure, some elements have dirtied politics, but not all of them. An interesting irony for me in the last week is I've been trying to find intelligent commentary on this thing, and you know where I found it? On blogs. There are some very good blogs out there, and that have much more in-depth analysis than the Herald could ever have.
Isn't that a case, though, of being like, you know, maybe like the British papers, that you end up reading what you want to hear?
Well,
of course it is. I've seen this time and time again over the last few weeks. It's, all the various liberal voices saying, oh, you know, you can't trust the media to report stuff, but I like this blog. They're doing their job properly. Oh, you mean it's the right flavour for you?
The right flavour of blog. Well, I just think, if look at intelligent writing, there's a guy called Gordon Campbell. I don't know if you know him. He used to write widely for the Listener.
And he's
a very, very good writer. Go read his stuff. And he's quite even-handed, very mature, no F words, none of the screamy, shouty stuff. And there are other writers out there like him. And I'm not saying just because I agree with him every time. I'm just saying he's a good writer. And that's what we need. We need a far more mature approach to this. And I think if we're going to do that, we've still got to go back to this allegation of corruption at the core of government. These are serious, serious allegations. And we go back to Jason Eade. Why are they hiding Jason Eade? If it's all dirty politics, if it's all a beat up, if it's a conspiracy, they've got nothing to hide. The Prime Minister says his position is, quote, rock solid. Let's hear from Jason Eade if you've got nothing to hide.
The thing is, Jason Eade wasn't elected.
But paid by us.
Well, yes, true. But
so what's more insidious? The guy who's paid by us to do bad stuff? Because the difference, there's been quite an interesting point. Okay, people elected Muldoon, but at least he had the balls to do the shafting from the front. You know, he was a mean guy, but we knew it. You know? So the guys we've elected have deceived us.
Still.
Well, some people claim they've deceived us. They claim they're lily white. The proof has yet to be found, and the crucial factor in the finding out is Jason Eade. Where is Jason Eade? It's a small country, And all the journalists out there, surely they can find him in the phone book or find, go to Hawaii and knock on the door of the gated community. They've got to find Jason Eade. There's got to be a story there.
And oh, I think there would. There'd be a fantastic story.
That's the story. That's the background. And it might be the background to Cameron Slater yesterday urgently going for this injunction to stop any further leaks. I think that they're worried about is the leaks that will come are the ones from Jason. The final.
And it does seem to be that maybe the leaks that will make a difference now are ones that won't come from there. And if we look at, Judith Collins.
No, but that's just them playing the game. Right? You just got to understand how the game gets played. They, right from the
start. You're very authoritative this morning, Alex.
Well, because I know this stuff. I've read the book, and I've also done a lot of research. But the way they've played the game, and I've also done a lot of public relations myself. I've been in the communications game for years. But the way they've played the game is they thought they could bluff it out from the start. So we went, there was the screaming, hysterical left-wing conspiracy. So they started that. They've dropped that line because it kind of didn't stack up after a while, but it's still a left-wing conspiracy. It's still an attack on left-wing bloggers. So they cannot take anything from the book, because if they do, they legitimize the book. That's why that one email that appeared that implicated Judith Collins that came from outside the book nailed her, because she should have been busted on more important things before that email. And if you look at the terms of reference for the inquiry, it's only about that one email. The one email that is not referenced in the book. Because if they give the book any credence, suddenly their defense collapses.
So what about looking wider into the wider election campaign? Because as well as the dirty politics stuff, obviously now we're into, we've had a number of debates. We've had leader debates. We've had the smaller party leader debates. Quite a lot of election coverage and kind of to and fro and all the rest of it. How's that striking you? Is it helpful? Is it giving you an indication of who's doing well? I
think the 5% threshold is a very interesting debating point right now. It appears Winston's got it. I
would imagine he will, yes.
I think most astute observers are saying Winston's over the 5%. But did you see the inverted commas rogue poll on Thursday where conservatives are
supposed to be getting over the 5% mark? I find that very worrying.
But I also find it hard to believe.
Well,
Am I kidding myself?
Well, I hope. Who knows? I mean, as a lot of people are pointing out with polls, a lot of it's based on landlines, landline numbers, whereas a lot of people don't have landlines anymore. I know I don't.
Well, I think internet miner will be deliberately underrepresented in normal polls. I'd say to the tune of 3 or 4%, probably. More than the margin of error, even. So I reckon.
Yeah, but margin of error gets misquoted all the time, and margin of error is 3% or whatever it happens to be at the center, not at the edges. So,
And the other thing that is often overlooked is undecideds, because the inverted commas rogue poll on Thursday that put National seriously up, that had a very, very high undecided contingent. I think it was 18%. Something like that.
That is a lot.
So the people that said National are good are diehards, but there's a large, almost, a fifth of the population that haven't decided yet.
And so have either of you been dipping into the coverage and the debates and so on?
Yeah.
And what's your take on those? How have those gone? I mean, both in terms of, the presentation and facilitation of them, but also the performance of the politicians.
I must admit, I found the Labour National ones very hard to watch, because there's only so many times you can listen to John Key using that overworked phrase at the end of the day.
At the end of the day,
oh, they should slap him every time he uses it. His handlers really should say, you've got to stop saying that, because becoming embarrassing.
Well, maybe they're saying, keep using that one because it means nothing and it takes up time. Just keep up saying that at the end of the day, New Zealanders will decide for themselves. It's what they call a glittering generality. You can just say stuff that means nothing, but it fills up time. Yeah. But I also found the second one especially quite infantile. For a prime minister to interject saying, whatever, that's incredibly ill-mannered. That's like a 12-year-old. And I read a really interesting analysis of his performance that said we don't have a prime minister right now. We have this guy performing in a very infantile way. And this analysis was unpicking some of his radio commentary, where he was asked the most important question in the interview with Guy on Espana, And he responded by saying, does it matter?
The Guy and Espinner interviews on national radio have been
very strong,
stunning.
Yeah.
Very strong, yeah.
And I think, you know, interesting because John Key usually doesn't go near national radio.
Well, I predict he won't go near national radio for the next 2 weeks. He will not give Guy and Espinner any more time. And the guy's trying to work, he's trying to survive on his, one of his closing lines in one of the debates was, I think I've got a good record in judgment. I'm not so sure about that.
No.
You know, when you think, this was the guy that endorsed Aaron Gilmore, John Banks, Judith Collins, who gave an hour of his time every week to Tony Veitch. This is not good judgment. This is the guy who said a rape allegation was not serious. That's not good judgment, but he's trying to, this is his last defense. I think I've shown good judgment in my term. Not so sure about that. And he needs to be fronting up on national radio to face Espinner some more. I think Espinner's interviews were getting to the core of it.
What about the minor leaders' performances in the various debates?
I know I missed the minor leaders' ones, unfortunately. I didn't get a chance to see that.
There was a nice comment about the irony of talking to the minor leaders about child poverty sitting around a restaurant table. the staging of it was quite ironic. But I think the minor leaders are giving us some interesting theatre. The way Winston Peters is, you know, that enigma that we've never quite figured, dear old Winston.
He's got that terrible smug look again.
Yeah, he's feeling good.
Yes, you can see he's already licking his chops.
Yeah, and then there's Colin Craig changing his stern image to the smiley image. Have you heard about
yes.
that? But have you seen his posters?
I noticed a couple on the way in.
The
here.
One There's says less politics.
Less politics, and another one just says justice.
But I love the way he's campaigning for political office by saying less politics. Isn't this the guy who takes everyone to court if they don't listen to him?
Oh.
Maybe it's less politics, more litigation.
Yes, he's got to win the prize for biggest crybaby in the election. Although the runner-up would have to be Judith Collins.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always disappointing when these tough image politicians come unstuck. Is it too much to ask that just once in a while we get one of them who actually gives us the full panto villain bit?
Yeah.
Ah, curses, foiled again!
Yeah, calling.
You may have stopped me this time, but I'll be back!
Yeah, but and see why she's calling Cunliffe a moron, you know. But we know how this will play out. Collins will, she will fade away from politics and be offered a few lucrative directorships of big corporations, and that will be where Collins will be going.
Well,
next.
That is pretty much what most former politicians
Yeah, she'll
get.
Become one of
it's
these
unusual.
Trophy directors. But yeah, she's a disaster. And,
well, some would say she's been working for corporates already.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Her husband's. But Colin Craig's an interesting character, isn't he? I'm worried about, you know, there's that old truism that the trouble with political jokes is they get elected.
They get elected.
So are we going to have is Colin Craig going to prove that to be true?
I really hope not. I mean, it could be entertaining in a kind of horrible way.
Mm.
That if National do get in and are forced into coalition with the Conservatives, it's they're not going to enjoy it.
Well, what their bottom line, well, so they say, is binding referendum. So the first referendum that'll come up will be the one about asset sales. Will Colin Craig be doing us a favour?
Ah, yes.
Interesting point, hey?
He just strikes me as one of these annoying people that crop up from time to time. Like, I was reminded of Ross Perot
in America
back in the 80s, of these self-made men who admire their own handiwork, who have this thing that, well, you know, I ran a successful business and running a country can't be any different.
There's some danger towards these sort of vanity campaigns, these vanity careers where Craig's throwing millions of his own dollars at the advancement of self. You know,
yes.
Something doesn't quite doesn't work for me there. Yeah.
So let's have a look at how the election's playing out on the island.
Okay.
I mean, so we talked last time about the billboard, so we can leave that. But the Golf News has been running an ongoing series with the three top contenders for the electorate seat,
mm-hmm.
and
good, yeah.
But there, other than that, there doesn't seem to be a lot going on. I mean, today we've got apparently Winston Peters is on the island.
Is he on the island?
Oh, oh. I'd meet him.
He's speaking at 11:30 apparently.
Has he got? I wonder if he's got a big poster prepared that has got
just
no
follow the cloud of cigarette smoke and whiskey fumes.
But you know that seems to be again fairly low key. There was a bit of mention earlier
in
the week.
Where is he speaking? Sorry,
I think at Ostend.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Well, Jacinda Ardern has been fairly visible the last few weeks. She's been on the island quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that's worrying this time around is the reluctance of the National Party to let Nikki Kaye get involved in any actual debate.
Well, there was talk at one point of Nikki Kaye running a series of her own meetings, but I see in her advertising that she's got a bit of advertising in the local publications, but there's no mention of those meetings in there, so I'm not sure if they're going ahead or not.
Yeah, and I think those meetings where she gets to talk uninterrupted are actually not good enough, basically. In a functioning democracy, have to have debate. We have to have two people talking, and in a civilized way, not like the PM and Cunliffe were the other day. We have to have civilized debate. And if she's not prepared to face up to a public debate with the local candidates, I don't think she deserves our vote.
No.
I'm sorry.
But it does rather give you the impression that the party handlers have probably sat her down, tried her out on a few questions, and just gone, she's not up to it.
Well, it's also the team key strategy. You know, everything rests on the team leader, and who's now being shown to be ever more dubious. And I think, you know, the only spokesperson is this one person. And if ever they allow another spokesperson into the picture, like Bill English last week, he and Key are disagreeing on the nature of the tax cuts, you know. So the whole strategy around Team Key is just let the one guy do all the talking, and that's probably why Nikki's not fronting. And she does. She needs to. It's not good enough.
So there is one proper candidates meeting happening.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Where is that? Which is on Monday.
Yeah.
The budgeting service are presenting it. It's a candidate forum.
Yeah, that's the one Nikki wasn't coming to.
Speaking to the statement, the level of income inequality is often seen as a measure of the fairness of the society we live in. So they're asking all of them to address that statement. So we've got, who have we got? We've got Jacinda Ardern, Denise Roche from Labor and Greens, respectively, Dasha Kovalenko from ACT, Miriam Perard from Internet Mana, and they're shipping in Paul Goldsmith, who's standing for...
Now, that is just utterly curious.
Well, that guy's a joke candidate. He's the guy who's standing to not be elected. What a, and he's, this is where things start getting to a level of absurdity. He's standing in Epsom. The thing that intrigues me is the decile 10 clever voters of Epsom have this appalling voting record. They've returned Rodney Hyde, who was discredited for corruption scandals, and then they returned John Banks, who was convicted of fraud. So now this guy, who are they going to vote for? The guy doesn't want to be voted for.
David Seymour's that candidate there, but we've got Paul Goldsmith, the national candidate for Epsom, coming up. And actually, Waiheke Radio is going to be both broadcasting and recording this.
Oh,
we'll broadcast it live and podcast it.
Well, let's hope we do get a chance to ask.
Yeah, but what's the guy from Epsom going to do?
What's he doing on Waiheke? Yeah, what's relevance to us?
How can he address the issue of poverty or income disparity from his golden perch in Epsom?
So, yeah, this is from 6 to 8 on Monday at Artworks Theatre. Entry by donation of a non-perishable food item for the Waiheke Budgeting Services Food Bank.
That's a nice idea.
Oh, yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah.
Well, good on them. But
What time is that again?
6 o'clock, Monday.
I would reiterate the challenge. Nikki Kaye is our electorate MP. She is the one who should face. She's the one we elect. She's the electorate MP. We have got nothing to do with this guy from Epsom. She should face.
Yeah, and after all, given the high turnout of vote for her from Waiheke at the last election, it is a bit rude.
Very rude.
To suddenly stand us up like this.
Mm. Yeah, but I think it goes back to that strategy. Don't let anyone else talk. Don't get into corners. Don't get into awkward things. Because they've really got quite a few difficult policy corners to talk themselves out of. And this is one of them, the income inequality, the growing... you know, the growth of child poverty, for instance.
Now, the last thing, I'm picking that both of you are voters, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I think I might turn out and vote.
Yes.
So I say you were a frothing voter.
Frothing voter, yes. That's right.
Yeah, I love the way you described yourself as a frothing voter.
Yes.
Now, I mean, obviously in recent years, and particularly in the last election, a very, very low voter turnout, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who were not only... This isn't people who weren't enrolled. These are people who are enrolled who didn't vote. Yeah. So they've, you know, got over the first hurdle, but they don't turn out. I mean, for either of you, I mean, is there a kind of a ritual around this thing, or is it, you know, just kind of you get to kind of 5 to 7 on Saturday and go, oh, bugger, I haven't got down to the booth yet?
First light.
For me,
it's an incredibly important thing. My heritage is growing up in a country where, you know... more than 60% of the people weren't allowed to vote. So you were voting for, you know, a dozen others. And it's a very sacred thing. You mustn't give it away. And I'm really concerned that in this nation, we're giving away something precious. And it's all too easy to lose these things that are precious. This was the world's finest democracy. I'm in a little bit of doubt about that right now. We've got to recapture that. It's a very, very, very important
thing. So your first light, and do you have a particular booth you go to or anything like that?
No.
What about you, Alan?
I tend to go mid-morning.
Mid-morning sounds good.
I like to give myself a chance to sort of...
change your mind?
No. I've generally decided by election day. I mean, I must admit I've been undecided on this one a lot longer than anything else. I've decided to hold my nose and vote Labour.
I wonder how many people change their mind at the last moment.
Oh, a few, I suppose. Mm. But I, you know, I like to get a chance to get an extra cup of coffee and really get the nerves tingling, and then just spend a bit of time enjoying the atmosphere.
Well, yeah, because it's so quick, isn't it? So you've got to have some kind of build up because otherwise it's kind of like, oh, it's done now, and then you're sitting around waiting until the evening to.
But this issue of changing your mind at the last minute might become a factor in this election. The 15th of September, you know, the big reveal. Will that have any effect?
Can anything more than what has, you know, what we've seen over the last month? I mean, you know, when Kim.com announced that he was going to do this big reveal about John Key on the 15th of September, that was before the Dirty Politics book. And I don't think anyone could have anticipated what's happened. So anything follow that up?
But where we're at is John Key continues to deny. Without Jason Eade telling his story, there still is not the actual definitive proof.
But do you think that anyone cares? I mean, his popularity is going up.
Enough people care, definitely.
What
more could come out? Are we suddenly going to get the revelation that John Key dines regularly on roast beneficiary baby?
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that.
Why not?
You just enunciated it so well. But I think what could come out is what .com was threatening would be irrefutable proof of the lie.
Yeah, and again, it'll be interesting to see whether people care if that's the case.
Well, they should, because we're in a relationship here. If you're in a relationship with your beloved, and if your beloved had lied to you consistently over the past few years, and people who keep account have got up to about 20 or so times that John Key has knowingly lied to the people of New Zealand. It's not acceptable. Simply put, it's not acceptable.
So back to the voting thing. So obviously you've both got your sense of the voting and how you do that. Where do you stand on this? You know, I mean, there are some who would say, look, not voting is a conscious decision. It's an active decision not to give weight or to give give legitimacy.
I don't see a lot of that. I think most people who don't vote can't be bothered.
I destroyed a dinner party last Friday where a guy in his 40s tried to present that line almost from a sort of intellectual cynicism point of view. And the dinner party went steadily downhill from because I got quite het up by saying it's infantile and irresponsible in the extreme. It's simply not an acceptable line of defense in a nation that is the world leading democracy. Probably you just can't do that. It's like it's your basic adult responsibility, probably more so than brushing your teeth or tying your shoelaces or sending your kids to school. It is your single most basic essential duty as an operating citizen. You cannot run that line saying I'm not playing.
Yeah, to abdicate that responsibility is contestable in the extreme.
Especially given the fact that there are millions and millions of people around the world who don't have that privilege.
Yes.
You know, it's just not acceptable.
So. Mind you, of course, you know, one reason that a lot of people don't vote is they're simply not bright enough to figure it out. And I'm okay with them not voting. I'm sure everyone was very amused at the appalling spectacle of Paul Henry's daughter being interviewed on politics. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see
that. Oh, my God.
Paul Henry's daughter. What was that? Just explain it to me.
I have no idea why he would have subjected his youngest daughter to such an appalling humiliation on television.
So he interviews his daughter on his show.
No, they had somebody else interview her.
On his show?
And yeah.
But what was the point?
I think it was to show that they were trying to find people who really don't follow politics very much. I think he'd interviewed the guy who cuts his lawns the week before, who had said, you know, well, I don't know anything about that sort of stuff. I wouldn't know about that. So he did an interview with him.
And then
there was his youngest daughter, who was beyond dim.
Oh, shame.
She was absolutely humiliated. Well, she humiliated herself, although she wouldn't have seen it that way, because she was dim.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
You know, I've owned domestic pets that had more.
I didn't see it, but I did hear one thing attributed to her, and you might know whether she actually said this or not, that she said she didn't think we should get oil from whales.
What do you think about whale oil? She said, I think we should leave the whales alone. You know, if you're going after oil, you should just... how should she put it? Scoot the whales out of the way when you're getting oil. It was awful. If people as dim as that can avoid polling booths, well, that would help.
Well, all of this amounts to a reasonable defense of the voluntary voting option. I think we shouldn't make it compulsory, but at the same time, it should be a given. You do it, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people have suggested that the New Zealand high school curriculum should include some basic information of civic duty.
Yeah.
Well, the New Zealand curriculum gives the leeway. I mean, they can do that. If a teacher wants to do it, they can do it.
Yeah.
It's hardly a part of the
process.
Yeah, I reckon it should be a basic course. At second last year of high school, we do a course on civics.
But then again, civics is a compulsory part of the education system in America, and that hasn't exactly helped.
No, true.
that's not a healthy democracy
either. It's quite an interesting thing. Sorry, this may be a digression, but it's quite interesting to see what people really need out of education. I was involved with the high school for a while, and we did have a small cadre of naughty kids that couldn't fit in the normal school system, and they would have been excluded if they were, but you know, in Waiheke, if you exclude a kid from the school, there's no other school for them to go to. So the Waiheke school, I don't know if they still do it, but in our day, there was what we called an off-site classroom for these renegades or whatever you want to call them. They're the ones that just couldn't fit into the normal schooling system and had been naughty and would have been excluded. But anyway, they were at this off-site classroom. And to make this off-site classroom work, we had to give them much more of an input. We weren't going to teach them history or maths, you know. We said to them, what do you want to learn? How can we help you with education? And the number one requirement for these guys, they were mostly boys, was teach me how to drive. I want to get my driver's license. They saw that as the most important first step in their education. An interesting
really?
One. Yeah.
Oh. Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at the American civil rights movement, I mean, the link between that and literacy, was they went hand in hand. I mean, the literacy was about the political process and how you participated in it, because they put all those barriers in place.
Yeah.
But anyway, we should wrap it up.
Otherwise we'll be here till dawn on polling day.
So we talked to Dee Ostring, the Island Returning Officer, earlier. So you can vote from Monday.
Oh, good.
The polling booth is open in the library, and I'll... She gave me the hours. I won't try to remember them. I'll put them up on Facebook instead.
Yeah. Now, I do believe that on...
But what happens if you vote before the 15th? What if you cast your vote and you want to change your mind after the 15th?
Well, tough.
It doesn't sound like you're going to change your mind.
I might. I fail to see why it's important for people to vote earlier.
Well, I mean, I think might be going on holiday. It's about the options and getting rid of the possibility that it might not happen.
It is going to be quite interesting. I believe Malone's are going to be hosting an election night party.
Oh, that'd be good.
Which would be rather nice because they do have the big screen TVs up there, and they have wireless internet for those who like to follow things on their phones and tablets and so forth, which I know I do. I think it would be enormous fun to have a decent election night party. Everyone turn up and watch the coverage whilst getting merry on a few ales.
All right.
As a student of human folly, I would like to see how the whole concept of gracious losing goes down. You know, whether whoever loses, how well they handle it would be quite interesting to see.
Well, there will be weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth from somebody, I'm sure. But, I mean, I've always tended to hold election night parties, but I haven't got a television anymore.
But
so
the thing about a party is you're assuming everyone's going to be there to celebrate.
No.
So you'll hold the party regardless.
Definitely,
it'll be drowning sorrows or celebrating.
I don't see it as anything to do with needing to celebrate anything. Yeah. It's just celebrating the fact that we're having an election. And it's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting.
So our opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yep. Back next month to talk about the actual result.
Yes, the result next month. So 2 weeks today, we'll all know it all. Thank you very much to both of you.